What's the difference between a dog and a cat? Well, a dog sees its master and says, "He feeds me, he grooms me, he cares for me, he must be a god." A cat sees its master and thinks, "He feeds me, he grooms me, he cares for me, I must be a god." Peter Trachtenberg is a cat person, and his new memoir, love story, travel narrative, Another Insane Devotion, is about his relationship with cats and his desperate search for a cat named Biscuit, who wandered off during a period when his marriage was looking shaky. It's published by DiCapo Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Peter Trachtenberg to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I know a district attorney who says that the one thing DAs and defense attorneys agree on in selecting a jury is no people who own more than three cats. They believe that those people are totally crazy, but they can't predict in what way. What do you think? Are they onto something, or is it just another example of prejudice against cat people?
No, I think they're onto something. I think you can have up to three cats per person before you become a crazy cat person. I have three now, and that's like just at the threshold.
And that's the limit.
Yeah.
And then after that, you're somebody who just
after
has
that,
a lot of
cats. After that,
you've
tipped over. Yeah.
Why do you think that the number of books about dogs, fiction, nonfiction, memoir, instructional myths, and guides to training and care are so much more plentiful than the ones about cats? And we have all these dog heroes, Lassie, Rin Tin Tin, Balto. I can't think of any cats.
Oh, I have a whole section in the book about that, because dogs are easier to write about because they communicate on human terms. I mean, it may have been because they co-evolved hunting with us, and so they learned to signal on our wavelength. And cats signal us, but they signal us on their wavelength. I mean, when a cat blinks, it conveys a great deal of information. A dog conveys it conveys, A, that they're not planning to pounce on you and eat you, and that you're not planning to pounce on them and kill them. So that's one thing. It's a basic signal of non-aggression. And I remember being told that if I did that at a cat, like three times slowly, it would almost invariably blink back at me. And having long periods of boredom, I started doing it, and it worked.
Didn't you once have a book about teaching cats tricks?
I did have a book called Tricks Your Cat Can Do, and it was the most useless book I've ever had.
So it did not become the kind of bestseller we see with all these dog books.
I think you can do it with a certain amount of diligence. I didn't have that diligence.
No, but cats also have a bad rap with people who don't like cats. I've had cats who were totally independent in the cliche, stereotypical way. And then I've had cats who just want to cuddle up with me, who love to sit with me and purr. And they did all the things that people say only dogs do.
Yeah. No,
I want to please their master, in effect.
Have you ever had a cat bring you a vermin that it's killed?
Yes.
Well, that's about pleasing. It's about pleasing and taking care of you. I mean, there's a whole split among, I guess, felidologists, you'd call them cat experts, as to whether they're doing that as a gesture to a social superior or whether they're treating you. And there's a wonderful phrase one of these guys uses, a deputy kitten, as this stupid, helpless thing. That
so they bring you a mouse.
Yeah. Exactly.
And leaving it, dropping it at your feet.
Or on your pillow, better.
The frame of the story is that Biscuit, your cat, wandered off from his cat sitter and disappeared. Was it unusual for Biscuit to wander off?
Well, she would go out for the day. She'd maybe been out overnight. I mean, I live in the country, and I've gotten flack for having let cats out. But as long as I lived in the country, I did. I had, however, lost cats. With Biscuit, she was never out more than a night. And I usually could find her. And she would usually come in and out. She liked her food. And she's attached to her home.
But you weren't living there at the time.
At the time, I had taken a teaching job in North Carolina. You know, it was a period of transition for me. It was my first full-time teaching job. And so it was very important for me to take it. And initially, my wife at the time. Was going to care for Biscuit and the other cats. She unexpectedly got a residency in Europe. So she went off to that, and we hired a kid, it was a friend's kid, to be our cat sitter.
Was your marriage in trouble at the time? You were living apart?
We were living together. We spent time apart. I would say that I was on some level intuiting that it was in trouble. Mm-hmm. I would say that Biscuit's disappearance coincided with sort of a growing awareness that there was a rift between us.
You think that Biscuit just felt like a child who runs away from home? Mom and dad are not happy?
Oh, who knows why she ran away, why she went off. I mean, you can't Their heads are black boxes. She may have gone out looking for one thing and gotten distracted.
Now, have you ever had dogs?
I've had them briefly, basically on a loaner basis. So I can't say I've ever owned one.
But when did you get your first cat?
I didn't get my first cat till I was in my 30s. I didn't have any animals growing up. And when I got my first cat, it was very much about wanting some stability in my life and wanting to experiment with caring for something.
Mm-hmm. Because being responsible for something.
Yeah, and I'd had a very feckless life before that.
Is it fair to say that initially part of the appeal of cats is that they don't seem to require a lot of maintenance?
Yeah, that was definitely part of the appeal.
Where a dog, you'd have to walk it every morning and every night, and maybe in the middle of the night it would signal you that it wanted to go outside as well.
That and because dogs seem to have a constant need of attention and reassurance and affection, whereas cats have a wonderful ability to coexist in a space with you.
But with cats, we're often reading into what we think they're saying.
We can imagine
anything.
But we're reading into everything. I mean, that's one of the points of the book, is that I don't necessarily know what my wife was thinking and feeling a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. So this is analogous to human relationships.
Yeah.
You can ask a person a penny for your thoughts or what are you thinking right now, but you can't do it with a cat.
Yeah.
The first cat you had a serious attachment to was named Bitey, which doesn't sound all that loving, and nothing like Fluffy or Fifi or anything.
Well, she was
like
a bitey cat. I think it was, I'd had her for a couple of weeks. I'd been calling her Bridget, and a friend came over, and she was just a kitten, and she was pouncing from person to person, and the guy waved his finger at her, and she nipped it, and he went, "Oh, that's a bitey cat you got there." And that became her name.
And she didn't get past that, because some animals, dogs do as well. They, when they're puppies, they nip at you, and then later they change.
She was one of these cats who, if she got overstimulated, if you petted her too long, she would get this wild glow would come into her eyes and the pupils would balloon in size, and then she would suddenly sink her teeth into your hand.
Peter Trachtenberg is the author of The Book of Calamities and Seven Tattoos, A Memoir in the Flesh. His work has appeared in most of the major publications. His latest book is called Another Insane Devotion on the Love of Cats and Persons. It is published by DiCapo in their lifelong imprint. So what happened with Bitey?
She was possibly the first creature who I'd loved. I mean, I'd loved my parents and I'd loved a couple girlfriends, or thought I had. But she was the first creature who I just paid attention to. There wasn't anything I needed from her. I just was interested in her. I'd never had an animal living with me before, so there wasn't anything I could really take for granted. And I would just watch her grooming herself. I would watch where she went during the, you know, and as much as I could track her. And I think that out of that curiosity, that's where my first experience of love came. And I think that all love sort of springs from this basic desire to look at the other, not because you want something from them, but just out of a curiosity about their being.
Didn't Bitey leave a tooth in your arm as a parting gift?
This was right before she died, possibly a week before she died. I was petting her. She suddenly spun and bit me. And this time the tooth came out in my hand and sort of quivered there for a second before falling over.
Now, you made the point that you see parallels between relations with cats and relations with other people. And you make that point here, parallels with your marriage. You tell the Gnostic Gospel version of Adam and Eve's expulsion from the Garden of Eden. How do dogs and cats fit into that?
Well, there's a story from the Gnostic Gospels or a Gnostic myth that there were a cat and dog in the Garden of Eden. And the dog and Adam formed a relationship. Adam would throw stuff to him. And the dog was very happy. And the cat just liked to watch them. He was very curious about them. They were kind of outlandish, being hairless and walking around on two legs. And then one day, Eve listened to a serpent, took this fruit, ate some of it. It was wonderfully nice. The dog came over, getting very excited, because it looked like there was something nice. And dogs approach the whole world with this look like maybe something for me.
And dogs pretty much eat everything, isn't it?
Yeah. And so the dog tasted a bit of the fruit. Then the cat came over and was looking at Eve. And she thought the cat wanted something. She felt kind of begrudging about it because already she had been infected with greed by eating this thing. She held it out to the cat, and the cat just looked at it and walked off. And then God appeared and told the man and the woman that they had screwed up big time, and they were going to be punished with death. And the animals were involved in their sin in some ways, so they were going to be subject to mortality too. And God gave them a choice as to where they would go. And the dog said he would follow Adam and Eve. He would be with them. He would watch their baby. And the cat said, well, let me stay here. I mean, I'll just wait till they come back. And in the meanwhile, I'll be the spirit of this place. And in the meanwhile, he keeps the mice down.
Now, that's from the Gnostic Gospels, but you have a real-life story here. You've included the story of taking some Fresh Air Fund kids for 2 weeks in the summer. How does that fit into the larger story that you're telling?
Okay, I don't refer to it as the Fresh Air Fund. I don't think I refer to them as Friendly Town kids, but they were kids that we had brought in.
Am I reading too much into this?
You may be, but we can leave it unstated. I don't want a suit from the Fresh Air Fund, which is famously litigious. At any rate, we brought these two kids in for part of the summer.
Testing the idea that you might want to have kids of your own?
Partly, yeah. And partly just as a gesture of general beneficence. We'd first arranged to take one kid. We had spoken with his mother. And at the last minute, we were told that there was a second kid on the Friendly Town bus whose family had sort of bagged out at the last minute. And could we take him as well? And we thought, oh, two kids, they will get along and entertain each other. Well, they hated each other. And their temperaments were completely the opposite. One kid was very quick and verbal and smart and rather mean. And the second kid was slower and bigger and would fall over when he was put on a bike. And finally, we ended up placing the second kid with another family to protect him really emotionally. And it was disastrous. It was this horrible, traumatic moment.
And you say that you think that moment you sent him away was the beginning of your rupture with F, your wife.
Looking back in a way that I can't even say, you know, I could not describe it causally. But it was the first moment in which we were implicated in something. It was like a sin of a certain kind. And one of us took it one way and the other took it the other way.
You identified with each identified with one of the other kids?
Yeah, that's part of it.
And what about the cats? Is it fair to say that in the book, F seems to have about some of the same qualities you find in cats?
Either she has them or I'm projecting them onto her.
Well, she's intelligent, but removed, a bit of a watcher.
Yeah.
Not sloppily affectionate, not easy to read. And you say that she was one of the loneliest people you knew. Was that because she was self-sufficient? Although we won't reveal her name, she's quite well known. She is constantly put into social situations. Is she never happy in them?
I would say let's talk not about the real person, but about the person I call F. Because in a way, this is a work of nonfiction that's almost like a parallel world to the real world. It's true. You know, I didn't make anything up, or I made up one thing in it, which I offer a prize to the first person who spots. But it is meant to stand on its own. F is somebody who is socially awkward, who feels attacked by other people very easily.
She feels that they pick fights with her.
People slight her suddenly and unpredictably, and I have to say that I witnessed it.
Did you feel that way about you, too?
At intervals, yeah. I mean, I'd say that part of the book is about the ways in which one betrays unwittingly and unintentionally somebody one loves. Mm-hmm. You know, about the way in being a husband, particularly, you end up failing.
And do you think cats react to humans that way as well?
I think cats, in a way, are more forgiving, although they do get slighted. I mean, when I would have Biscuit sleeping on top of me, if I had to get up in the middle of the night, there was always this kind of affronted way she would gather herself up and leap off the bed.
I had a cat who was obviously annoyed that I left her for 2 days.
Yeah.
And when I came back, I'm not going to say what she had done on the very nice bedspread, but I saw it as an act of revenge.
Yeah, cats are spiteful. That's a big part of their makeup.
But you got Biscuit as a couple. This is not... So the both of you decided to have this cat.
We both decided to have this cat. At the time, we had three others.
And did she have a good disposition?
She had a wonderful
disposition. Much nicer than Bitey.
I mean, put it this way. She immediately claimed me. She had been found as a kitten up a tree in the country. She was drenched with rain. She was very sick. The people who found her thought she was going to die. I saw her for the first time maybe 3 weeks later when it was clear that she would survive. But she was still, her face was like caked with nasal discharge. And she immediately came up to me and like clasped my hand between her paws and began licking it. So she had claimed me.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the sort of thing that people love in dogs, but cats, there are many cats that do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then she ran away.
She walked away. I don't even think it was running away. I think, who knows, somebody conjectured that she may have gone looking for me because, you know, cats do not understand the thing that, well, somebody else is going to watch over you while your humans are gone.
So you felt guilty. You had left her alone. If you'd stayed in the house, you'd still have Biscuit.
Exactly. This would never have happened. And the thing is, I got a call from this cat sitter, and she had already been gone for 3 days. I was furious at him for not having told me before. And I was teaching at this college in North Carolina. I was going deeper in it. I'd already been in debt, and I was going deeper into debt with every month I taught there because I was paying two rents. And I had to decide, well, by the time I get up there, it'll be 4, maybe even 5 days. Do I go spending money that I don't have to look for a cat? And I had to. I could not have lived with myself if I hadn't looked for her.
What did you learn about yourself from the search for Biscuit?
Well, I learned about the existence of this weird compulsion in me, which I later identify as obligation. And it's the obligation that you feel toward anyone or anything that you truly love.
In there had been another cat, Gattino, that F had found in Rome.
Yeah.
And when Gattino went missing, you actually wound up talking to psychics?
We talked to psychics.
I mean, what did they tell you?
Well, we had a number that the ones I respected actually said she's dead. They would differ about what he had died of. At one point, I was told he was by a body of moving water, and I went racing down to where there was a creek that moved parallel to the highway and was looking. I went there probably 10 times, you know, for hours at a time with a can of cat food, holding it out and calling, Gattino, Gattino. Somebody said that he had eaten antifreeze and died. Somebody else said that he had fallen into a deep place and gone to sleep. Then somebody said he was at an animal shelter, and we called or emailed every animal shelter.
You never found out?
No, we never found out.
And you never found Biscuit either?
That's the spoiler in the book.
Okay. Well, we won't talk about it anymore, but often when people lose an animal, a loved one, the animal dies, let's say, they find it very hard to replace it. Their friends will all say, oh, you just get another cat. Oh, just get another dog.
Look, if this book has any point, it's that love is love, and it's very mysterious, and it is, in a way, it's an insane devotion. There's no real reason why you should love anybody except for a child because you have a genetic stake in that child. The rest of it is all a fluke.
Peter Trachtenberg's latest book is Another Insane Devotion on the Love of Cats and Persons. It's published by DeCapo. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. It's great to be on.